Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome inside ESPN Studios. I'm your host, Spencer Wilson. As always, on the board, Mr. Sean Cloud.
How's everyone doing?
And we're back on the air.
We're back.
We were off. We involuntarily took a week off last week. It wasn't really our decision. We programming decision to put the baseball games on. Not that's a bad thing, because I don't know about anybody out there. I enjoyed a full day of baseball last Friday with all four division series going on, and it was a heck of a day. It was a great day. So not mad about it, just it's good to be back on the radio. It's fun to be back on here. A lot to get to, obviously, not being on a week. We got a lot to cover, so we'll hit all the big ones, NFL, NHL, NBA, MLB. A lot to talk about. Obviously, some fight news that we'll get to. If you've been living under a rock or just don't care about MMA, we'll inform you about what happened in Vegas on Saturday. And, some other stuff going on as well that we'll get to. But, of course, we always start locally, and we have a big game coming up tomorrow for the Nevada Wolf Pack. They host rivals Boise State, and it's been a very hot and cold rivalry for the Wolf Pack. They had a little trouble as of late. Boise State's on a five-game winning streak, winning from 2011 to 2014 and then last season, and then they didn't play in 2015 and 2016. So that would make the last win for Nevada in this rivalry back in 2010, the infamous overtime game with Kaepernick and Chris Alt still at the helm for Nevada. Nevada comes back. Boise State, I believe, was ranked fourth in the BCS rankings at that time. They were contending to be the first kind of non-Power 5 team to really threaten the BCS championship game. Nevada crushed those hopes in a beautiful fashion, coming back from being down. I think it was 17 or 20 points. I'd like to say they were down by two or three scores, and they ended up coming back. Of course, the missed overtime field goal for Boise State helped seal that win for Nevada. My sister was actually at that game. She was a student at the time.
Oh, really?
And I still give her some BS for this, because obviously it's cold this time of year in this area. So the very start of that game obviously looked very ugly. Nevada fell down for two or three scores. So by the middle of the third quarter or so, they decided to leave, my sister and a few of her friends. And then they get to a sports bar like 2 miles away or two blocks away, and they see that Nevada is now down by a score. So they rush back to the stadium to try and get back in. I don't think they did.
Of course not.
I mean, you can't leave until it's over, guys. It's never over until it's over.
I mean, that reminds me of the time that I left like a no-hitter game for baseball.
Ooh.
In the eighth inning.
Oh.
It was just like, oh, well, we know who's going to win. They'll probably get a hit, whatever. And we leave. We're listening on the radio, and they're like, yeah, no-hitter. I was just like,
man, you can't leave a no-hitter early.
That just shows you.
You shouldn't leave anything early unless, you know, there's like,
I learned after that.
10
never left
seconds
ever.
Left, and they're up by, you know,
40 points.
Crazy point amount of points, yeah. But it's a game to look forward to. It should be some fairly nice weather. Tomorrow it's an evening game, so bundle yourself up. You don't want to be too cold out there. But it should be a good one. Obviously, we've gotten reports that Ty Ganji, we believe, will start tomorrow, but he will not be at 100%, which is just going to make this a little bit tougher. Just from a few differences. Points allowed per game is one of those differences. Nevada's defense, who has been kind of up and down this season, allowing 34 points per game. Boise just at 20 points a game. So that there is going to be the big difference. How much can Nevada kind of change up the offense, but have a little more variation to the offense and try to get at Boise, because their defense is solid, but there's holes in every defense, especially if you look at yards allowed by Boise State. 311 yards is enough yards to do some damage. So Nevada's going to have to pick their spots and what they want to do. I think it's going to have more of a mixture of run and pass. They're an air raid offense, but they're going to have to work in the running game if they want to give Ganji some time, because I do think that it's better to have him out there, even if he's not at 100%. If you can still have Ganji in the pocket slinging it around, it's a good thing for your offense. So you're going to have to just rely a little bit more on your run game in order for the defense to respect it and give Ganji extra time. That's all you're going to be able to do in that kind of a circumstance. So we'll see how it goes. I think it's going to go well. It's going to be a tough game, but honestly, I don't think that they can't win it.
Right. I mean, Boise is going against a defense that's similar to another defense that they played, I think, a week ago. That kind of gave him a little bit of a hard time. So hopefully we can keep the pressure on in terms of defense. I'm not too worried about our offense, but the defense is my biggest concern.
Right now, Boise State's a 16.5-point favorite. Do you think that's too much for Boise State? Do you think Nevada can at least, I mean, to say someone's basically going to win by two touchdowns and a field goal on the road against a team that maybe not have, that has their starting quarterback not 100%, I feel like that's a little too high.
Yeah.
I don't feel like Boise State's going to win by 16 points. I feel like they can maybe win by 10 if Nevada has one of those turnover filled games. But I think 16 is a little bit of a stretch.
I agree. I think it is a little bit of a stretch. And I think, you know, as long as they don't go down early and they keep the pace strong and they keep the everything there, then it's going to be a close game. But if they lose it early and they lose all faith in themselves, of course, it's just going to, you know, tack on points. And it could be even more than a three-score game. It could be a six-score game, you know, you never know. But I think it is a home game. And with the track of how Nevada's been playing, a win, a loss, a win, a loss, a win, a loss, where they lost last game, so they should win this game.
That's true. Boise State also coming off a loss. They lost at home last week to San Diego State, 19-13. San Diego State's playing some good football right now. The one win for Boise State, though, coming in conference, both teams, Nevada and Boise State, are 1-1 in conference. Boise State getting their one conference win a few weeks ago at Wyoming. They won 34-14. So you look at that road performance up at Wyoming and you think, okay, they're good on the road, especially since they did lose one road game. They lost at Oklahoma State when they were ranked 24th, 44-21. So currently they're 2-1 on the road with one win coming in conference on the road. So they show that they're comfortable. So how will Nevada be able to kind of give Ganji time, variate the offense, and make Boise State feel a little claustrophobic on the road? I think that's what it really comes down to, when you can get your fans into it. Because obviously we know that section that the visiting fans get is going to be rocking for this game at Mackey Stadium. So it's going to be important for all the fans there, including the student section, everybody. Because regardless of what you feel like, if you think that home field advantage doesn't play as much of a role, or if you think it matters, you know, makes every bit of difference in a game, if you as a crowd can make it tough on an opposing team and make them feel like you're coming down on them and it's claustrophobic, that can then help the defense because they're not just thinking about them, they're thinking about everything.
Right.
So I think it's going to be important for not only the fans, but everybody here in Reno to be able to really just get loud and support and be able to just shake the Broncos up.
Agreed.
Get them rallied.
Be that 12th man.
Yeah, exactly. Football, though, not the only thing going on. Let's get you caught up quickly here on some other Wolfpack news. Men's golf claimed their first win of the season, coming in first out of 12 teams at the Nick Watney Invitational, winning by one stroke over BYU. Joey Virch finished first with a score of 14 under. Sam Meek finished fifth, and Sam Horn finished tied for sixth. Women's golf, coming off the Ron Moore Intercollegiate Competition, finished 11th out of 16 teams, just missing the top 10 by a stroke, but still a good showing for the team, with Victoria Gailey finishing tied for 9th at 2 over. Both the men and women's rifle team will get started tomorrow at the United States Air Force Academy in Colorado, going up against UTEP and host Air Force. So rifle now getting going for their season. Tennis, men's tennis will be in Vegas for the ITA Regionals, pretty much starting next Monday down in Las Vegas, and they'll go all the way from Monday to Friday. Women's tennis will also be in Vegas for the ITA Regionals Wednesday and Thursday next week. Pardon me.
Breathe. It's okay.
Yes. The cross country team will race tomorrow in Madison, Wisconsin for the pre-national invitational. It'll be their last competition before their conference championship meet, I believe, on October 26th. The soccer team, unfortunately, has dropped its first two games of a four-game homestand, falling to San Jose State 2-1 and then Fresno State 1-0. The team is now 4-8-2 on the season, and their next game is today, folks, here at home against San Diego State. Kickoff at 6:30. So go out, check out some football tonight, or soccer tonight, and check out some football tomorrow. Swim and dive will be in California for the Pacific Invitational today and tomorrow. And then the volleyball team is on a three-game skid, unfortunately, dropping games at New Mexico, 2-3, at UNLV, 1-3, and then at San Jose State, 1-3. Their next game is tomorrow at Air Force. I think after that, They will be able to return home for a two-game homestand. The team is now 8-10. And then basketball, which is just a few weeks from getting going here.
Are you excited?
Oh, I'm so excited. Ken and I, our boss Ken, the great, wise Ken Allen here at the station, we're talking when I first got here. This could be the best opportunity for this Nevada basketball program, the men's team, to make the Final Four and to really push nationally. I was telling Ken that the past couple years, it's been your starters. You've had one or two guys off the bench. Last year, they had some good depth, and they really stretched that out. I feel like this year, they have even more depth to that team. So you can have 8, 9, 10 guys that are ready and willing to contribute. And I feel like the way Musselman just handles that team and pulls the right strings every single game, he's going to find groups that really gel together. And this team's going to be scary, man.
I agree.
This team is going to be scary.
I feel like it's going to be the best season, you know, so far.
Yeah.
I mean, just all the talk about it, everyone, Caleb, the Martin twins are back, Lindsey Drew's healthy, the new addition.
Jordan Brown.
Yep.
Five-star recruit.
Everyone is just...
It's incredible.
It's stacking up,
yeah.
You know? It's very rare that Reno gets that opportunity to get very, very good players at their doorstep. And, I'm losing it in my head right now. I can't get the words out of my mouth fast enough.
That's how excited this whole city is about this basketball season
exactly, coming
up. And if you were a student, you got a cool treat last night as the basketball team held a scrimmage and kind of a fun, almost like an NBA All-Star night. They had a scrimmage between this the team, and they also had a three-point shootout and a dunk contest that had former alums and a few current coaches on the staff as judges, and it was open just to students. It was broadcast, I think, on Nevada Sports Network, but to be there live, you could only be a student. So I thought that was a pretty cool way for them to kind of include everybody. And then real quick, I got to give an update and a shout out because I didn't get to last week. The 1868 FC are in the playoffs.
Wow.
Now, 2 weeks ago we were on the air. This team was in seventh place. They were fighting to stay in it. Now, they are the fifth seed. They are in it, and if they win, so they're a point behind the Real Monarchs right now, who are in fourth. So if Nevada wins their last game and Real Monarchs lose their last game, Reno could jump up to fourth place and host a playoff game.
Wow.
Yeah, it'd be very cool. So I think regardless of whether it happens here in Reno or Utah, it looks like the 1868 and the Real Monarchs will be matched up for their first round matchup. But congratulations to that team. Yes, congratulations to the 1868 FC and Coach Ian Russell for making it 2-for-2. Second year of existence, second year in the playoffs. Congratulations, fellas. Absolutely amazing, amazing run. When we come back, before I do that, we mentioned the Wolfpack football game tomorrow. We will be having the Wolfpack tailgate as well. I believe it runs from 5:30 to 7:30. It's at the corner of 17th Street and West Stadium Way, I believe is where it is at. They'll have the photo booth. They'll have porta sub sandwiches. They'll have games you can play. So swing on by, say hi to the talent that'll be down there, and just have fun with ESPN Radio and have fun tailgating before the game. Now, when we come back, things are happening on the gridiron that we can't wrap our head around, and things are happening on the ice that I'm just excited are happening again. That's coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show here on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. So Thursday Night Football, Week 6, went down last night, which, by the way, if you're ever wondering, hey, where can I watch Thursday Night Football and have a good time? Well, do I have the solution for you? So... if you don't know, if you're listening and you don't know, I am at Sully's inside the Tamarack Junction off South Virginia Street every Thursday night for Thursday Night Football. Myself, the remote tech Nick, will be out there. We got prizes, great stuff for you to come down when you can take part in the raffle there. And it's a lot of fun, great food, great drinks, great everything. So if you want to watch Thursday Night Football, have a good time with myself and Nick, come on down to the Tamarack Junction and find Sully's Sports Bar and just have a good time with us. But you know who wasn't having a good time last night? Everybody in blue,
including me.
Yeah, including Sean. Because explain to the people, Sean, why you. So Sean originally picked the Eagles,
yep.
But then tell them why you changed to the Giants.
So on Wednesday, going into Thursday morning, I had a dream that the Giants won by 3 points, And these dreams don't happen often, and normally they're right, but sometimes I guess they're wrong. So I woke up, and it actually kind of happened in two ways. Because I came to work, and I asked Ken, I was just like, Ken, who do you think's going to win? And he's like, oh, well, the Eagles are trying to make, you know, their Super Bowl team, you know, come back. The Giants look good, but they're just not doing anything. So then in my mind, I'm like, the Giants are going to win. The Giants did not win.
No, they did not. They
got demolished.
Yeah, I was going to say, in all respective terms, they got crushed. 34-13 was the final score last night. So here's my question. Because today, I don't know if it was the head coach or whoever, but they basically there's a headline that says, believe in Eli, the Giants sticking with QB Manning. Now, I don't think they necessarily believe in Eli as a quarterback. They believe in Eli as their only option. Because can you tell me, Sean, off the top of your head, who the Giants' backup quarterback is?
No, actually.
No, of course you can't, because no one knows. It's been Eli all the time.
Well, you could put OBJ back there. He throws better than he does anyway.
I think they have almost the same amount of touchdown passes this year. but that's what I think. I think they believe in Eli just because he's their only option. Because you're not going to just put somebody in for this season just to try and ride it out. You might as well just stick with Eli if you're going to do that. So my question for you, Sean, is Eli done in New York, or is he done, period?
I would say he's probably most likely done in New York if they can ever find someone to take over the helm.
They're probably just going to have to wait for the draft next year and try to get a quarterback.
You know, or just honestly throw someone else in there and give the ball to Barkley, because that's all that matters at this point.
That's true.
You're not going to win anything. Night. Just go. And I would have to say he's probably done in general. I mean, he doesn't look like the Eli Manning from 5 years ago. He doesn't look, and he hasn't looked like the Eli Manning from any of the Super Bowls or anything.
No, he hasn't.
So you got to kind of wonder, you know, is something else going on? Is something going else in his personal life? Or, you know, in the locker room, there is a lot of talks about stuff going on in the locker room. OBJ has to say, everyone has something to say.
Yeah.
Maybe the team just isn't connecting well anymore. You know, granted, though, Shepard and Eli Manning have a great connection in the air, whereas OBJ and Eli Manning just don't.
Well, I feel like that also just becomes, again, of OBJ trying to run that locker room.
True.
I mean, from what I've heard pretty much all week, it is now Beckham's locker room. So if you're Eli, you're an aging quarterback, you have your best receiver questioning how well you can play and how well your offense is even being conducted. So I feel like if management isn't done on Eli, OBJ is going to influence people enough to realize, okay, we just have to move on now.
Right.
We have to move on. And it's not going to be easy, because we all saw the reaction that New York fans had last year when they benched Eli. He lost his 280-something consecutive start streak. I mean, they basically rioted.
Right.
And that was what led to the firing of that head coach. I don't remember his name because he was there for two seasons. So,
but if you look at it this way, say Eli Manning leaves the Giants and he says to himself, I'm not done yet. Where could he go?
I was thinking about that today. We'll go by division here.
He could go to Denver.
I mean, he could go to Denver. So I was thinking, obviously, if you're the Steelers, you're not going to take him. You have Ben Roethlisberger. He's already aging. Why get another aging quarterback? Same in Baltimore. You have Flacco. And if he goes down, you already have Lamar Jackson as your next guy ready in the wings. Cleveland's riding Mayfield. They're not going to give him up. Maybe Cincinnati. If Dalton out doesn't perform very well, they have another bad season. There's questions again about this offense, who are not going through any kind of obstacles. Everyone stayed healthy last year, and they still just put up kind of a crud season. So maybe Cincinnati, but that's a reach. New England's not going to do it. Buffalo, maybe, although they have their young guy that's they're trying to ride. The Jets have Darnold. They're not going to give him up. What about Miami, though? Because Tannehill hasn't done a whole lot of stuff down
there.
That's
true.
So maybe Miami comes calling? I'm not sure. Or what about Jacksonville? You saw that offense struggle behind Bortles. I mean, that defense cannot stop a team. They could not stop Kansas City, and that offense cannot keep up with teams. So what if Manning goes down to Jacksonville for two or three seasons and just maybe gives them a chance? So Miami, maybe. Jacksonville, maybe. You said Denver. I could see Denver maybe doing it if the Case Keenum experience doesn't work out for
Tennessee
them.
Tennessee could happen because Mariota's keeps getting
injured. And then Indy, if Luck were to go down again. But again, that's kind of a long shot there. Then you look at other NFC teams. Nobody in his own division. Dallas has got Prescott. The Redskins are riding Smith. However, that ride is up and down. That game against New Orleans was not pretty at all.
Nope.
And then the Eagles aren't going to take him because they have Wentz. Then you look at the North. Detroit's got Stafford. So why bring Eli in? Chicago's got Trubisky, again, a young quarterback they're trying to build around. Rodgers in Green Bay, another experienced quarterback. So why really bring in another guy to try to compete with him? Because I don't feel like Eli is going to be a backup. So if there's a team where you go, he's got to compete with such and such, I don't think that's going to work out very well.
See, and that's why I don't think he'd stay in the league anymore. Just because they're – and what happens next year in the draft, you know, are there going to be more quarterbacks that come out? What's going to happen there? We don't know yet.
Yeah, so, we don't know.
I mean, it's hard to say. You know, give him maybe a couple more games to prove it. Maybe he can pick up next week. But if he doesn't and he still looks like garbage
–
You can't just play in garbage time and expect to win here, guys.
Especially not in a city like New York, when you got the Jets that have their quarterback now in Darnold. Although, that's been a rocky start since he's lost four straight. But
it's the Jets.
So we talked a little bit about the Jaguars. The Jaguars this week play the Cowboys. Now, these are two teams that had high expectations coming into this season. They're both 2-3 right now. So, who is in a worse position with a loss? Are the Jaguars in the worst position with the loss, or are the Cowboys? In my opinion, it's Dallas. Because with Jacksonville, I feel like we were all stunned by the run they made last year going to the AFC Championship game. And really, they are what we thought they were. They're a team that's going to rely on defense and hope their offense can keep pace or just get that one extra score that puts them up. They didn't do that against Kansas City. In a pretty ugly fashion, they do that at Kansas City. But again, the way Kansas City is playing, the way that Jacksonville is playing, I don't think that was a surprise, but it just shows you that they are a defensive-based team. The Cowboys, however, there is expectation to that offense. They expected Dak and Zeke to get back on the same page. They expected to have that kind of year like they did 2 years ago in both their rookie years. So in my opinion, if the Cowboys can't beat the Jaguars at home, that team is in a way worse position scrutiny-wise, trying to move forward and dig themselves out of a hole.
I agree, but I also think that if the Jaguars go in and lose this game, all eyes are going to be going down onto Bortles and that offense as well, because if you look at the past two games, it really hasn't been any, you know? We had the game, it was against Tennessee, right, that it was all field goals, and then the next game after, I think he only scored one touchdown through the air, so the offense isn't doing well. I mean, Fournette's injured, but Yeldon's been doing great in general, so you can't really blame anything on that, but like I was going to say about the Giants is, Barkley can't run the entire team.
Yeah.
Same goes for Yeldon and all these other guys. You really need that captain, that quarterback up back there calling those plays and deciding what goes on. But in terms of Jackson, I took Jacksonville to win the game. That was a hard one. I did go back and forth. I did flip a coin. I did all the jazz, you know, spoon on the head, everything to figure out what was going on. But I took Jacksonville because if they lose, then everything that we thought was going to happen with Jacksonville this year doesn't come to fruition. If Dallas loses, they could pick it up the next week. It's whatever. But I just feel like this is a big game for Jacksonville to show, hey, we're still in it, you know, because they haven't proved it the past three games.
I agree with that. Speaking of big games, Sunday Night Football this week is a big game. It could be a preview of the AFC Championship game this year. The undefeated 5-0 Chiefs roll into Foxborough to take on the tandem of Brady and Belichick. Who you got, Sean?
I got Kansas City.
I got Kansas City, too.
Mahomes is amazing. I mean, one interception and how many touchdowns?
I think he's up to like 13 or 14, I think, so far this year.
I mean, Hunt's on fire, Hill's on fire.
That whole offense is it looks like a video game offense.
Right, I feel like I'm playing Madden.
Yeah,
like,
you do. When you watch that team,
when
you're
Mahomes
like,
goes and takes the snap, he's just like,
yeah. And that, I think it was against Pittsburgh when he ran, I think, like two figure eights in the backfield and then just lasered it into the corner of the end zone. Like, this kid is doing things, and you forget that it's his second year. I keep thinking he's a rookie.
Right.
I keep thinking to myself, he's going to be the first rookie quarterback to win the Super Bowl, but he's a second-year quarterback, technically. Mm-hmm. He is a rookie starter, but he's a second year in the NFL. But what he's doing is unbelievable, and I feel like it's going to be the first time that Belichick really scratches his head. I feel like Mahomes is just going to show him things that he hasn't really seen, especially going up against guys like Darnold and Allen and Tannehill in your division. Mahomes is just like a quarterback that you just don't see right now in this league.
You don't see it all anymore.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be a really fun matchup, but I agree with you, man. I think the Chiefs take it. I think they take it by a field goal.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a high-scoring game.
Yeah.
The play style that Brady has is in the way that he thinks is almost similar to the way I feel like Mahomes thinks. You don't get it often that you get a second year quarterback, like you said, technically a rookie,
yeah,
going in and performing at the level of what you would say a Steve Young or the classic, you know, the classic kings of quarterbacks, you know,
Favre,
Montana, yep, all those guys. He just, I don't know, watching him play, have you seen, if you watch him close, watch him with his mouth, he's very rare. So he has, you know, like Cam Newton chews a piece of gum when he plays, you know, he has his mouth guard in there and he's just playing with it as he throws. And you can see him just think the whole thing and then just fire. And then at that point, you're like, first down.
The instincts that he shows just to be able to move, not only move, but you see a lot of young guys move and make dumb decisions because they're trying to do too much. It doesn't feel like he's really trying to do too much. Like, he's trying to do that little extra, but not to the point where you're like, dude, this guy's running the team out of the building right now. Like, you've got to stay calm. It seems like he understands what he can do and how he can do it. And the only thing Andy Reid has to do is just call the right play. And if he does that and keep his guy calm, I mean, I don't know who. I mean, if anybody, the Pats can beat them. But after that, I don't know. I don't know. No one in their division is going to touch them. I can tell you as a Charger fan, we're not touching the Chiefs this year. Oakland's not touching the Chiefs this year. God, no. The Broncos aren't touching the Chiefs this year. It's, I mean, for them to lose this division, it would have to be an utter, incredible collapse. I don't see that happening at all, even close to it. And I think this is just I just can't wait.
How many times do you think Belichick's going to slam his clipboard down to the ground?
Maybe twice. Yeah. I could see it once a half, him just throwing it down.
Or like just one big play, like a 75-yard bomb, yeah, you know, and he's just like.
I could see that. I could definitely see that. So going to be a fun weekend for the NFL. A lot of fun games on tap. But, of course, hockey is back, folks. Hockey is back, and I love it. So a quick thing. Obviously, we're just barely a week over into the season, so not a whole lot of stuff to talk about. But Toronto got maybe one of the best young players in the NHL with Austin Matthews. They are off to a very, very, very good start. 4-1 in their first five games. They have 8 points in first place in the Atlantic Division. Again, five games in. They got 77 more to go. It's not getting ahead of ourselves, but it's a very, very good start from a Toronto team that just keeps making the playoffs and keeps looking better and better. The defending champ, Washington Capitals, 2-1-1 in their first four games. 5 points, third in the Metro Division, but again, it's early. So since it's early, should Vegas be worried about their start?
Yes.
So Washington, we just said, is 2-1-1 through their first four games. Vegas, through their first five games, is 1-4. Two total points through the first five games for the defending Western Conference champions.
I really wish Haley was here.
I do too. I forgot that she wasn't going to be here until when I was writing this up today. And I was like, oh man, she needs to be here to defend her team.
Yeah, no.
But I don't think they need to worry too much.
I think they kind of do, though.
You do?
2 points in five games. I know it's early and I don't know hockey a lot, but here's what it is, okay? If you go through five games of any sport, and you only get two, maybe not soccer.
Well, one win.
Maybe not soccer. I don't care about one win. Four losses, though.
I know. That's what I mean. Like, five games,
was
one win.
Was the one win the first game of the first game of the season, or was it later? Because if it was the first game of the season, that, okay. And then three losses after, that's how I would worry. But if it wasn't, then maybe, but.
Checking their schedule right now. No, they won their second game of the year. They won at Minnesota 2-1 in a shootout.
All right, how many games have they had at home?
They have had... Oh, come on. Oh, come on.
It died, didn't it?
Yeah, we're still up. My screen went black, so I can't tell you. But they've had at least two or three.
Right. So
at home.
If they're not doing good at home, they're doing all right on the road. They're 1-4. But the biggest thing that I see there is 2 points in five games.
Yeah.
That's what worries
me. And if you don't know how scoring works in the NHL, you get 2 points for a win. You get a point if you lost in overtime or a shootout. And if you lost in regulation, you get 0 points.
Okay, then I completely did not understand any of that.
Yeah, because soccer is different. Because
I was thinking, you know, you were saying like 8 points, so they scored like two goals a
game. Oh, no. So Toronto, using Toronto as an example, they have 8 points because they have four wins. So four times two is eight. So then if you were to get a loss in overtime or a shootout, you get 1 point for making it through regulation without losing. There you go.
If I had a hat, it'd be thrown in the air right now.
But there you go. I mean, it's a fun time for football. It's a fun time for hockey. And it's even more fun time for baseball and the NBA, which we'll get into after the break. But first, Sean, we got something for the people.
We have a pair of tickets to ski Mount Rose for the 2018 and 19 ski season, plus a lunch for two from Porta Subs as part of our celebration of being your sport, your sports station for 50 years with Lotus Radio.
Boom! So, caller 9 at 775-333-0945. You get those passes to go ski this winter. And my computer's back on. They've had four games on the road. The last four games have been on the road. They opened at home against Philly. They've been on the road since.
Yeah, that's not good.
So, yeah, it's a tough start for them. But, again, 77 more games. All right, caller 9, you get the tickets. We'll be back with baseball and basketball right after this. It's Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. It's a great time to be a baseball fan because we are down to the final four. The Los Angeles Dodgers, the Milwaukee Brewers, the Houston Astros, and the Boston Red Sox. One of those four teams will be your 2018 World Series champion. And that starts tonight because game one of the NLCS between Milwaukee and Los Angeles goes down tonight, 5:09. Pacific time on FS1. So you can catch it on Fox Sports 1 is where you can catch that. But big game, obviously. Game one of any kind of a series is a big game. I don't know how to feel about home field advantage in baseball because look at what the Red Sox just did. They won both games in the Bronx. Now, granted, I don't feel like the new Yankee Stadium has the same intimidating feel as old Yankee Stadium because if you listen to a lot of people talk, like at the old Yankee Stadium, you were on top of the field. Like the higher you went, you were like leaning over to see the field. And nowadays, that stadium is not a joke, but you know, I could hit a home run in that stadium.
Could you?
Like it's easy to hit a home run in that stadium. Like probably not right off the bat.
Might take you a couple tries.
Pun intended. but like give me a week or so to train, work out, and lift weights. You know, just put me in there with Aaron Judge and let him beef me up a little bit, and I'll hit a home run out of there.
Manage the pitch is going 20 miles an hour, not 90 yes. or anything.
Yeah. Know that it'd be a very slow pitch, probably underhand as well, probably not overhand. But Clayton Kershaw will go for game one for the Dodgers. Gio Gonzalez will go in game one for the Brewers. So really, obviously for the Dodgers, you're going to go with your best foot forward. You're going to put Clayton Kershaw out there, especially on the road. You want your big ace, quiet the crowd, give your guys a confident game one win. It's an interesting pick for Milwaukee to go with Gio. Not exactly their number one pitcher, but he's been solid. He's been a very solid spot in the Washington Nationals starting rotation for the last couple of years. He was with them at the start of this season before he got traded over to Milwaukee. So I think it presents an interesting plan. If it works, for me, what I feel like the Brewers are doing, they're saying if we can put our number two guy out there and somehow just get to their number one guy enough, we can get past their number one. And by the time we get to Los Angeles, we can put our top guy out there and give him a run for their money and possibly put us in even a better position to win this thing. Now, that being said, I feel like the Dodgers are built for this kind of a postseason run. They added Manny Machado at the end of the year, and they've seemed to really, or he has seemed to really put a charge into this team's offense. And I think with that, it's going to be tough for the Brewers to beat these guys four times. So in my opinion, it's going to be the Dodgers in six.
I'm taking Brewers.
In what? Six. Okay, in six. Okay.
I'm just taking them as winning. Okay. I don't care how many games they win. That's fair. Just as long as they win. I lost faith in baseball a long time ago.
Why did you lose faith in baseball?
Because it's got boring to me. It wasn't until recently when they started adding in all these time clocks and different things and the review started coming in. I thought the biggest thing that they were missing was a review style.
Which even like MMA and stuff is using that now in select instances. So yeah. That's the one thing about sports that I think is really useful is replay in like major scoring situations.
Exactly.
Yes.
So, but recently it's gotten better. You know, at the beginning of the year, we were like, oh, I got to connect with the Brewers. We could get an interview. We never got an interview. Now it's like, oh, we should get that interview. I just see them winning. I don't like the Dodgers.
Yeah, neither do I. Plus, trust me, it doesn't make me feel good to say I think they're going to win in six games.
I know.
In fact, I'm fighting off a gag reflex saying it. But that's the world I live in right now.
I just see the Brewers taking this one. You know, we've seen the Dodgers in this situation a lot. We rarely see the Brewers in there. I'm taking the Brewers. I'm going to say Brewers in six. I don't know how it's going to go, but it's going to happen.
Okay. And then you have the American League Championship Series, which gets started tomorrow on TBS. You have the defending champion Astros against the best team in baseball. It had 108 wins this year. The Boston Red Sox, as Sean is swatting imaginary Red Sox out of the air.
exactly.
So with that reaction, I imagine you're going for the Astros.
Yes, I am going for the Astros. I don't like Boston team. It's not about them being either the best team or anything. They'll probably win, but I'm still going to go for the Astros.
I don't know about that, man. I'll tell you, I think between the ALCS and the NLCS, I think like the American League Championship Series is where all the fireworks are going to be, because you have two legit pitching staffs with, you know, you got Chris Sale leading the way in Boston. You have Justin Verlander leading the way in Houston. And then you have just two batting lineups that'll drop your jaw. It's insane. So I'm really looking forward to the ALCS. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think it's going to go the distance, but I think Boston takes it at home in Game 7. So no surprise, Sean's picking the Brewers and the Astros. I'm picking the Dodgers and the Red Sox. That
always
seems
opposite.
About right. But of course, baseball season winding down here in October, which means that basketball season is getting ready to kick up. And in fact, on Tuesday, the season officially gets started. So a couple things to look at. One, I'm very interested to see how Kawhi Leonard blends in Toronto, because the whole thing with San Antonio, how they handled his injury, he didn't want to come back. He didn't feel like they were doing, you know, enough precaution. They weren't taking enough precaution for him. Now he's not at a team he wanted to be at. He's up in Toronto, so I'm just interested to see what kind of team player Kawhi turns out to be. Because this sounds like it's going to be a one-year show. He looks like he's going to serve his contract there in Toronto and look for a new place to play that he wants to play. That's the thing that really gets me about this situation, is that Kawhi doesn't even really want to be in Toronto.
There's just so much drama with the NBA. It's like watching a soap opera.
It really is, because you think about it, it doesn't just stay on the court. It spills over into social media. I mean, Joel Embiid basically made half the name he made this last season, regardless of the great things he was doing on the court. He also made in social media. I mean, the guy was just calling people out right and left on his Twitter account last year.
You know what? Twitter should just be banned for all celebrities.
Oh my gosh, I agree. But that's a conversation for another day.
We'll save that for next week.
Yes. But there are a few teams that are going through some changes, like Cleveland, for instance, losing LeBron James. But Cleveland is projected to have 31 wins. Do you think that's too many wins for a LeBron-less Cleveland Cavaliers?
No.
I don't think so either, because you still have Kevin Love up there that can help run the show. You still got some other good guards, J.R. Smith and whatnot, if they can pull together and play well. I think they can get a little bit more. I think it'd be around 40 wins this year. I don't know if they'll make the playoffs. That might be a little bit of a stretch, but I think they can get more than 31 wins this year.
I agree.
And now let's talk about the team that LeBron went to. He went to the Lakers, and they're projected to finish ninth in the West, which would miss the playoffs, and have 41 wins. And I personally think that's too little for LeBron and the LeBron Lakers.
Yeah.
Because I feel like with the young talent he's got around him, Kuzma, Ball, LeBron, I feel like if he can keep his – that's going to be the key for him, to keep his patience level down. Because of that young team, he can feel frustrated, but I feel like he could at least get them to a 6th or 7th seed in the West.
I agree. I think they could go to the playoffs. If it's a LeBron team, let's be real, don't ever say they're not going.
Yeah, seriously.
They're going to just go.
That's why when I saw him projected 9th, I was like, you really don't think that a LeBron-led team is going to make the playoffs
right.
This day and age? Like, they're definitely at least going to be a contender to make the playoffs.
The guy is just unbeatable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's – I don't know if I've ever heard you make that noise before, Sean. That was interesting, yeah. So it'll be interesting to see. I can't wait for this. I've actually become more of a hockey fan, I think, than a basketball fan. But because I was a basketball fan for so long, I still know more about it, which kind of drives me crazy because I'm trying to learn hockey as fast as I can. But the names some of these guys have are ridiculous. I mean, it's easy to remember LeBron James or Lonzo Ball. It's not that hard. But when you got guys that don't even have like any vowels in their last name, how am I supposed to remember that? Yeah. Like, oh, Like Khabib, for instance, the fighter Nurmagomedov.
I usually what is call him. I used to call him Khabib, and then I learned when they were talking, like it's Khabib.
It's
like,
Khabib. Oh. Yeah, the K is silent. Speaking of which, we'll talk a little about what happened between him and McGregor this past weekend, as well as a few other news in the fight world and driving world. That's all coming up after the break here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Stuff to get to, some racing news. The Formula One 2018 championship could be decided here in a week's time as Formula One heads here to the good old U.S. of A. for the United States Grand Prix down in Austin, Texas. So basically, if Lewis Hamilton wins that race, which he's won 6 out of the last 7 races, if he wins the race here in the United States, Sebastian Vettel would have to finish 2nd just to keep the chase alive to Mexico. If Hamilton wins and Vettel finishes 3rd or further back, Hamilton would win, and the last 3 races on the schedule would just kind of be for giggles and, yeah, you know, cruds and whatnot. Thank you for the sound effect there, Sean. Big news coming out of NASCAR. One of the most successful driver-crew chief combinations will be splitting at the end of this year. Jimmy Johnson and Chad... Oh, I spelled it Chan Knaus on here, but it's Chad Knaus are splitting at the end of this season. The pair have won 7 championships together from 2006 to 2010, and then again in 2013, and for the last time in 2016, both men claiming they just need a fresh start. Big fight news, though. So we'll talk about the UFC thing here in a second, but there was a story very relatable to that happening a couple days ago. So tomorrow night on ESPN, Top Rank Boxing is putting on a WBO welterweight championship fight between the champion Terrence Crawford and the challenger Joseph Benavidez Jr. So what happened was Benavidez was at his practice working out in the ring, and supposedly he was talking some trash talk on Terrence Crawford. Now they're in the same area, of course, because they're getting ready for the fight that's happening tomorrow. So word got up to Terrence Crawford that this was happening. So Crawford then came down to Benavidez's workout and was kind of watching him until he realized who was watching him, Benavidez is that it was. So he turns around and they start jawing at one another and talking. And I can't tell what's being said, but at one point before it all ends, Crawford jumps up onto the apron and attempts to get into the ring before two of his guys basically pry him off the apron and push him out of the gym. And of course, Benavidez has to be restrained as well. So that got a little crazy. Not as crazy, though, as the end of UFC 229 last Saturday in Las Vegas.
Can people just not give each other hugs at the end of fights anymore?
No, man.
Everyone has to hate each other, don't they?
It's all about hatred in the fight game. So if you're unaware, UFC 229's main event saw the UFC lightweight championship on the line between current undefeated champion Khabib and
Conor.
And Conor. I try so hard. Nurmagomedov. I just feel like I'm never going to pronounce that right. But between him and, of course, probably the most famous fighter alive right now, Conor McGregor. So, a lot of personal trash talk between these two guys going into this fight. And Khabib dominates Conor. 3.5 rounds, dominated him. So then you get to the 4th round, right? Khabib, again, doing what he does best, ground and pound, just wrestling Conor like no other. And then he gets the submission victory. Okay, so Khabib makes Conor tap out. I believe it was to a rear naked choke.
It was.
So after the fight is over, Khabib begins to trash talk Conor.
No, he stands up and he starts taunting the guy.
Yeah, he starts taunting Conor.
And so
then
the ref comes in and starts pushing him out.
And then as the referee is pushing him out, he turns and sprints towards Conor's corner, climbs over the fence of the cage, the side of the cage, and then basically just dives into the corner of Conor McGregor.
He goes feet first into Conor's trainer because I guess like someone...
Again, more just trash talk that was going on.
Someone from Khabib's corner was basically tapping on Conor McGregor's trainer, and like something was happening with that. Then Khabib sees it and he's like, oh, well, more fighting for me. Woo! Let's go jump over this thing. feet first, like he's jumping into a pool.
Yeah.
And then it's just a fight between that. Then as all that's going on, there's a whole other thing going on Conor McGregor's side of the thing, who's still trying to recover from a rear naked choke.
And then
choke.
He tries, as that's happening, and a fan jumps in and starts beating. Conor tries to climb out of the cage as well.
And
then security's getting restraining him because they're like, we don't want McGregor to get loose in this arena. And the crazy, so all of that happens. So all of that's happening simultaneously. T-Mobile Arena security, Las Vegas, I almost said LA, Las Vegas PD is getting involved, right? So they completely, so once they get the situation somewhat handled, this is the part of the story that I will never under, again, I don't know fighters, I don't know that environment, that lifestyle, but Khabib is back in the octagon, and Dana White, the president of the UFC, is talking to this guy, and Khabib is telling him to put the belt on me. I'm ready. Put the belt on me. And Dana's going, are you crazy?
Dana straight looked at him and was like, if I put that belt on you, a riot will start.
Everybody here will try to kill you if I put this belt on you right now. Three of Khabib's cornermen were arrested, but no files were charged, and they were released. However, Khabib and McGregor have been temporarily suspended, and the Nevada State Athletic Commission on October 24th will have an official hearing between the two men to discuss whatever will be the further action of what happened, because of what happened. And I saw, I forget what they were comparing it to. It was another situation a few years ago where the man that was in Khabib's position got a 3-month suspension, I think, from the UFC or by the Nevada State Athletic Commission. And I feel like it's going to be more than that.
Oh, yeah.
For Khabib.
I mean, he literally went out of his way to jump over and then chuck his feet into these people. My biggest thing is that on the Conor side, right? Conor's getting destroyed and everything, and then people hop over and start hitting him.
Yeah.
Where's Conor's team?
They were trying to fight off Khabib. That's where they were.
One guy.
But crazy. So we'll see what comes of it. I hope they don't strip Khabib of the title. And, of course, he threatens to leave. If he does, he's an idiot and he should just lose the title anyway. But I hope they don't strip Khabib. I hope he serves his suspension and we can see round two between these two guys, because I think it would lead to an all-out massacre inside the stadium. That's just a joke. Don't write in with your angry. But if you do want to write in, kind of write in, if you have a question that you would like myself or Sean to answer, you can email us at spencer@lotusradio.com or sean@lotusradio.com. We would love to answer your questions next week on the air, so let us know. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at @my2spenceworth. And I hope you have a good weekend, everybody. Peace!